Blog Talk Radio. What a lovely show I have for you today. There's a new issue where there's a dividing line between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Perhaps this is unsurprising, but it's very indicative of how they are on virtually every other issue. Because you got Bernie swinging 1,000 miles an hour, knocking it out of the park, and you have Hillary dodging and bobbing and weaving and trying to say, "No, I'm kind of with you, but I'm not really with you. But I'm going to say I'm kind of with you, even though I'm not really with you." So we'll discuss that. In fact, I want to kick it off with that in just a second here. Some other stuff that you have today as well. We have CNN did another town hall last night, this time with Donald Trump. Oh, boy. It was him and his whole family. I've never seen a worse fluff piece in my entire life. CNN should just basically shut down their whole operation today. I mean, it was the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen. It was really, really bad. All right, so we'll cover that. Bill O'Reilly's all in today's show. He's got, I think, two segments in today's show. One where him and Donald Trump go back and forth on the issue of race. Uh-oh. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. And there's another one where, yet again, he talks about Bill O'Reilly. He talks about himself, which I'm actually sure he does a lot. He talks about Bernie Sanders, and it's classic Bill O'Reilly, where totally dismissive, totally smug, totally condescending, and totally wrong. So we're going to talk about all that and much more. All right, sticking with Bernie and Hillary off the bat here, let's do it. There's a new issue where there's a divide between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. It's a proposed executive order called the Model Employer Executive Order. And the whole purpose of it is that it would, quote, give federal contracts only to companies that uphold good labor standards. So when Bernie Sanders and his campaign, when they were reached for comment on this, their response was, oh, do we support that? Totally. 100%. I mean, I love that. Great idea. Fantastic idea. When Hillary's campaign was reached for comment, according to the Huffington Post here, quote, the Clinton campaign wants to see the language of the executive order first. Now, this is a perfect example of how Hillary acts and what the perception is versus what the reality is, because when she says something like this, she allows herself to then turn around to all of her supporters and the broader public and say, no, see, I told you I'm the pragmatic one. I'm the moderate one. All I'm asking for is to see the text of said executive order before I agree to it. So get off my back here. You have to be smart about this stuff. You can't just say, I support it. You have to obviously read the text of it first. So she spins this into a positive. But what's the reality about this? Why wouldn't she just say, yeah, I'm with that executive order? Because they explained to her in detail what it is. Well, she wouldn't say it because she's actually not in favor of it. Because this is an executive order that would make it so that whoever the federal government gives contracts to, they have to abide by good labor standards. They have to pay a living wage, for example. They have to be open to the idea of unionization, and they have to not crush it immediately. And Hillary Clinton takes a lot of money from corporations that crush unions. Hillary takes a lot of money from various corporate interests that are totally against raising the minimum wage to a living wage. So the reason why she's doing a tap dance here and saying, I'd love to see the language of the executive order first, is so that she doesn't say on the record, yes, I'm for it, and then if/when she's president, she doesn't do anything about it. People go, hey, what the fuck, you flip-flopped. She gave herself wiggle room where she could say, well, I told you I needed to see the language of it first, and I don't like the language of it. Guys, it's perfectly straightforward. It's perfectly clear. it's not difficult. And this is why Bernie was like, yeah, obviously, that's a great idea. The idea that the federal government only does contracts with people who do good labor standards. So that's just, hey, our taxpayer money going to contractors with the government, let's not make it so that a wage is not a living wage. Let's not make it so that they're crushing unions. Let's make it so that the people who the federal government employs, they do okay financially. Hillary's like, I'm not sure. And this is the exact same excuse that she used for the TPP. You remember that? She flipped on it at one point. And she said, I don't know why Senator Sanders keeps attacking me. All I did was wait until I actually read the bill before I opposed it. That's what this is all about. So again, trying to spin it like, I'm the responsible one. He's reflexive. He's so far left, he doesn't even read the bills before he comes out on a certain side. Well, Hillary, if you just read the bill first in order to say, I don't like it with the TPP, why did you lobby for it 45 times before you flipped your position? So according to your own logic, according to your own reasoning, you were pushing for TPP before you even knew what was in it. So what a joke this is, man. The reality is, anytime she doesn't come out and give you a clear-cut, concrete answer, it's because she doesn't agree with you. She's not on your side. And we've seen so many examples of this, where, for example, on money in politics, Bernie Sanders says, we have to get money out of politics. Very straightforward, and the corruption, and the legalized bribery. This is exactly what we say on the show all the time. This is exactly what every liberal and progressive in the country, if they're really that, this is exactly what they want. What does Hillary Clinton say? Devil's in the details. Got to look at the fine print. We need to get dark, unaccountable money out of politics. Wait, why did you add those two words? No, we have to get money out of politics. Private money needs to be out of politics. No, we need dark, unaccountable money out of politics. You want to know why she's saying that? Because the rules and the law to get dark, unaccountable money out of politics, that just means we need transparency laws. So she's not going to get money out of politics. She wants to get unaccountable money out of politics, which means, hey, we're just going to pass transparency laws so whenever people buy the politicians, whether it's through a super PAC or a campaign or what have you, they have to disclose that they're funding the politicians. Now, that's a step in the right direction to say we can know fully who's bribing our politicians. But they're still bribing our politicians. Bernie says, let's stop the bribery. Hillary's like, no, let's stop unaccountable money in politics. Stop saying unaccountable. Just say get money out of politics. She can't do it. Why? She doesn't agree with it. Same thing here. I'd have to read the executive order that says the federal government can only contract with companies that do good labor standards before I agree with it. Why? They're just asking if you're in favor of a living wage, good labor standards. That's not a hard thing. This isn't one where it's super nuanced and there's gray area. It's just, hey, should the government contract with people and pay them not enough money to survive? They're like, I don't know. I need to see the wording of it. She says this because she's in the pocket of corporations, guys. I need you to not be naive. I need you to not be stupid. I need you to open your eyes and actually read what's going on in the world. Look at the different articles, see where Hillary Clinton falls on the different policy positions, and understand that if you are a liberal, a progressive, if you're a left-winger, well, then the choice is clear. Like, it's one thing if you say, hey, no, I am center-right. So that's where I fall on the spectrum. I'm center-right. I don't want a political revolution. I don't want to get money out of politics. I'm kind of rich myself, so I'm pro-corporate, pro-establishment. If that's your position on the spectrum, by all means, vote for Hillary Clinton. But you should be fully aware of who and what you're voting for when you vote for Hillary Clinton. You are voting for somebody who represents that, who represents being center-right, pro-corporate, and pro-establishment, whereas Bernie represents being a liberal, barely. I say barely because in the context of the U.S., sure, he's far left. Nobody denies that within the context of the U.S. But the Overton window, the spectrum, is so far to the right in the U.S. that Bernie, in an international sense, is a centrist, just like I fancy myself. So this isn't some crazy person. This is somebody who's the most pragmatic candidate we've seen running in the U.S. in a long time, fighting for basic progressive positions. Universal college, universal health care. This isn't radical. It's radical if you don't believe in it. The U.S. is unique among modern nations in the sense that we don't have these things. So if you want to keep getting screwed, by all means, you know what candidates to vote for. All right, now, let's move right along here. Yippee skippy. We're going to go to the Democracy Spring. I love these guys so much, man. And what's going on with that? And how the media is covering it specifically. So the Democracy Spring protests to get money out of politics have been happening for a few days now. And actually, they're continuing the rest of the week here. But the mainstream media in the U.S. has almost totally ignored them. So we go to Zaid Jilani and Lee Fang of The Intercept here. They report some facts on this. The sit-in resulted in over 400 arrests, a massive number by Washington sit-in standards, while the action, dubbed Democracy Spring, garnered wide coverage on social media and over 136,000 tweets. Cable news programs found little time to cover the political protests, instead focusing largely on horse race coverage of the presidential candidates for most of the day. During daytime and afternoon news segments, CNN did not devote any coverage to the actions. MSNBC mentioned the protests for approximately 12 seconds, while Fox News mentioned the arrests and discussed the protests for about 17 seconds. That's the most there was. Fox News, 17 seconds. Now, online is getting more coverage. In print, it's getting more coverage. We've always said online does a better job and print does a better job. Whenever we lambast the mainstream media, we're primarily referring to CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and also the nightly news programs on ABC, NBC, CBS, and the rest of them. And they do a horrible job. This is abysmal. That's what you're going to give it? You're going to give it 17 seconds coverage? That is an absolute joke. You don't know what your job is. And they're telling you here what the strategy is for the mainstream outlets. Their whole business model is predicated upon, let me tell you the horse race angle of this. So you have Hillary Clinton said this. Oh, my God, you believe she said that? And then Ted Cruz said that. Oh, my God, isn't that amazing? Let's talk about them like they're celebrities, personalities. Let's talk about them. Okay, no, but the whole point of news, the whole point of your entire profession, journalism, reporting, is you're supposed to give facts, you're supposed to give data, you're supposed to fact-check the candidates, you're supposed to give information about the world, you're supposed to do actual news stories about what's happening. And when people are protesting to get our democracy back, and you have a record number of arrests in the process, fucking crickets. Fucking crickets. Now, this isn't the case with all protests. Anytime there's, you know, some right-wing goofball protest, whether it's a Tea Party event and people are dressed like George Washington, or there's some neo-Confederate protest somewhere, yeah, that'll get some coverage. But God forbid you have liberals protesting on something that actually makes sense. Don't talk about it. You want to know one of the main reasons why that is? These mainstream media companies are some of the biggest beneficiaries of money in politics. So if they cover this and if this spreads, they're hurting their own bottom line. Because where does money in politics end up? So it originates with Wall Street and big money donors and giant corporations, of course, and billionaires. They give it to the politicians or to their campaigns or to their super PACs. Oftentimes, a lot of that money, they end up running ads on TV so that they can get their name out there more, and then they can lie about the opponent more, and then they can win the election, and then obviously when they get in office, they do the bidding of the donors who gave them the money. But a lot of that money, if they pay for it in the form of TV ads, well, the CNN is getting a lot of that money, MSNBC is getting a lot of that money, Fox News is getting a lot of that money. So there's a reason why there's that old song and that old saying now, the revolution will not be televised. Because, bitch, the revolution will not be televised. But as of right now, we have a new game in town. That game is the internet, social media. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have YouTube. We have other print outlets online. We have people who don't have that direct conflict of interest. So are we going to show you what's happening? Fuck yeah, we're going to show you what's happening. Fuck yeah, we're going to show you what's happening. And they even say that it was covered in the mainstream press for the few seconds it was brought up. So they didn't even say, hey, this is about money and politics. Hey, this is about corruption. Hey, this is about legalized bribery, which is a bipartisan message. They didn't even say that. They said, oh, I don't know, something, voting rights dispute. So they're trying to, like, minimize it, downplay it, or in the minds of people, they think, oh, I guess it's people who are protesting to try to, you know, reverse the move that the Supreme Court did recently with the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, which also is something that people should protest, to be clear. But no, this issue is a bigger issue. It's an umbrella issue that covers all other issues, but it's downplayed, scoffed at, oh, it's just a voting dispute, something like that. No, no, no. We're fighting to try to get our fucking democracy back. Because as we discussed on the show yesterday, 93% of the time, in one election, another election, it was 95% of the time, the person who raises the most money gets elected. And, of course, that's because they can run more ads, get their name out there more, lie about their opponent. And when they get in power, they do the bidding of their donors, which is why there was a Princeton study, political science research, which found that the American people get what they want in terms of legislation none of the time. None. But if you're part of the elite, if you're part of the donor class, if you're part of, if you're the corporations, if you're a lobbyist, well, then you get what you want almost always. So this is a movement for all Americans. This isn't just for liberals. This isn't just for progressives. This is also for true conservatives. This is also for moderates. I mean, when you look at polling data on this question, most polls, it's over 80% of the American people say, yeah, money controls this stuff too much. And there's a reason why even when we have consensus among liberals and conservatives, we don't get anything done. Over 90% of us wanted a universal background check for gun purchases after the Sandy Hook massacre. We didn't get it because they're not listening to us. The Republican politicians specifically are taking money from the NRA and listening to them and the gun manufacturers. 80% of us want to raise the minimum wage. We don't get it. Why? Because even though a majority of Republicans want to do it too, well, you have the politicians listening to the corporations who are the only people in the country that don't want to do it. So this movement is right. There's no other way to put it. And yesterday, it was Elderly Folks Day at the Democracy Spring protests. So you had senior citizens who were there holding up their signs about getting our democracy back and getting money out of politics. And of course, the police ended up arresting them too. God forbid you're a senior citizen who peacefully protests to have their voice heard, bring back one person, one vote, make it so that our government is responsive to us. Well, we can't have that. We can't have that. So all the people who broke the record 2 days ago in getting arrested, all the elderly folks who got arrested yesterday, and all the people who are still there today, I want you to know we're with you, and we know you're 100% right on this issue. And what if the movement kept going and kept growing? What if instead of 600 people there, there were 1,000 people there? What if instead of 1,000, there were 10,000? What if instead of that, there were 100,000? What if one day somebody in the Capitol looks out the window and they see a million fucking people out there? They're going to start to feel that pressure. They're going to start to feel that pressure, and we're going to push them in the right direction. And as Bernie Sanders says, this isn't a movement about any individual person. We all like him. We want him to get elected, no doubt about that. But this is also about all of us. And even if he were to become president, he would say, you ain't going anywhere. You got to keep putting pressure on this government too. So this is what the United States of America is all about. This is the best of America. And if we keep applying pressure, eventually, even though it doesn't feel like it right now, but eventually we will win. Okay. Now, we're going to go to the International Business Times, and they're going to talk to us a little bit here about taxes. Ooh, how fun is that? Oh, this is the only show where you bring that up, and I guess most people are still like, that's pretty boring. But to me, I'm like, ooh, a story about taxes. All right. Interesting. Yes, I'm very dorky. I don't say so myself. The International Business Times has some new numbers out on corporate tax evasion. And this is particularly relevant in the wake of the Panama Papers leak. So they say, according to a review of the most recent IRS data by the watchdog group Citizens for Tax Justice, American corporations in 2012 housed more than $500 billion worth of profits in just 10 small nations. The group said the smoking gun proof that the schemes are about tax avoidance comes from Bermuda, the Cayman Islands, the Bahamas, and Luxembourg, where the profits reported by U.S. corporations were larger than the entire reported gross domestic product of those countries. All right, so let's stop and think about this. I mean, this is unbelievable. It's basically like, no offense to these different nations, they're lovely, but it's like going to somebody who has a very small house, very meager income, they're relatively poor, and then you go in there and look at that. In the basement, they have $8.5 million just fucking sitting in a corner covered up. Like, you think something fishy's going on there? That's more than your entire net worth. And they're like, no, what do you mean? There's nothing weird going on here. That's what this is. This is, oh, there's $600 billion that was in 1 year. You can't tell me that's all legal? No, obviously, you're doing various different corporate tax schemes. Inversion is one of the biggest ones that we talk about. I mean, they're fucking playing us for fools, man. They think we're suckers. They think we're stupid. We have eyes, dude. Like, we see what's happening here. All right, let me give you some more. They say CTJ and other left-leaning groups have been calling for a new law preventing that maneuver. Congress could end this corporate tax avoidance in a straightforward way. Get this, guys. This is all you have to do to fix it. By ending the rule allowing American corporations to defer paying U.S. taxes on their offshore subsidiary profits, they would still be allowed to reduce their U.S. income tax bill by whatever amount of tax was paid to foreign governments in order to avoid double taxation, but there would no longer be any reason to artificially shift profits into tax havens because all profits of American corporations, whether earned in the U.S. or in any other country, would be taxed at least at the U.S. corporate tax rate in the year they are earned. Okay, that's it. All you need to do to fix the gargantuan amount of tax avoidance that's going on by U.S. corporations is one rule. One rule. Why haven't they done it? Why hasn't it even been proposed? You want to take a wild fucking guess? Because all these corporations are paying the politicians. Again, we come right back to money and politics. When you have all the corporations, all the lobbyists, the entire donor class dumping money into your campaign, into your super PAC, and in specific cases, like Hillary Clinton, for example, giving them money in private speeches, well, then obviously when you're in power, if all they ask you for, hey, all they asked me for was to not pass this one rule and to therefore allow them to keep doing tax avoidance, you're going to listen to them. Guys, a system as rotten and grotesque as ours is, it's so far gone that I'm of the belief that even well-meaning people are eventually going to be bought off by the system. So you have the rare cases where you have truly, truly principled people that don't sell out. Bernie Sanders is one example. Elizabeth Warren is another example. Some people in the Progressive Caucus, there are other examples. But the overwhelming, over 95% of people in our government, in our current system, even if they're well-meaning, and I think most of the Democrats are, doesn't matter. The system chips away at their moral and ethical code. The system lets them know. It reassures them that, no. Yeah, oh, you might have some sort of qualms about this, but understand, this is just business. This is just business as usual. There's nothing weird about this. There's nothing wrong about this. It's built into the system. And as a result of that, you get the politicians like Barney Frank, for example, and like Hillary Clinton, who, to them, this corruption is – they don't view it as corruption. They just view it as, of course, this is just part of the system. What we're fundraising. That's what it is. What are you getting all upset about? So they look at people who are true liberals, and they're like, oh, oversensitive. Let me berate you. You're so wrong about these political issues. No, they're 100% right. You've so fully bought into this terrible system, and you've just accepted it as a duh that you can no longer discern right from wrong. So that's the problem that we're dealing with here. And guys, this has real world practical consequences. Not only does this stuff increase the deficit when they don't pay their taxes, it also makes it so that there's a shift of the tax burden. I mean, it used to be the case that corporations paid a good chunk of the tax burden in the United States. Well, ever since we've had money in politics and they've been dumping money into the pockets of the politicians, now that burden has been shifted to you, the middle class. So now you're paying more taxes, they're paying less taxes, and the entire time they're paying less taxes, they have the nerve to continue to scream that they're the oppressed ones. They're the victims. They have to pay too high of a tax rate in America, which is nowhere near true. The nominal rate in the U.S. is the second highest in the industrialized world. Nominal rate, meaning that we're talking about the corporate tax here. Nominal rate meaning the rate on paper. But what's the effective tax rate that they pay? The second lowest in the industrialized world. So there is no argument that, hey, these corporations are getting a rough deal. That's why they have to ship the money overseas. No, they're already, if they were to stay here, they're paying one of the lowest rates in the modern world, the lowest corporate tax rates. So they're doing it because that's how they're designed. They're designed to try to make as much profit as possible, be as greedy as possible. And the only way that you can stop that is to have good government rules that don't allow it. But when we have politicians bought by those corporations, they're never going to do those rules. So it's time to get the money out of the system and get politicians who will crack down on them and simply make them pay their fair share. I'm not asking for anything above and beyond. I'm not being unreasonable here. They just need to pay their taxes like everybody else, just like you pay your taxes. Okay. Take a break here. When we come back, CNN did another town hall last night, this time with Donald Trump and his entire family, and it was a total and utter fluff piece. All right, stay right there. Love the diversity of music in the break. That may be a first, though. I think that was K-pop. It's fun. It's very fun. All right. Let's talk a little bit. Let's do a little chat skis here. What occurred on CNN last night? So CNN did another town hall last night, this time with Donald Trump and his entire family. Apparently this is a new thing. They did it the night before with John Kasich and his entire family. I don't know why they're doing this, but the bottom line is the 10 minutes of it that I caught, it was a total and utter fluff piece. I mean, the questions, it was honestly like an SNL skit. The questions, and by the way, they pre-approve all these questions. They talk to people in the audience who are going to ask the questions beforehand, and they say, okay, you get clearance for that one. They were like, Eric, you know, I liked my daddy a lot. I loved my daddy. And what we would do together is we would go fishing, and it was some of the best times of my life. I'm wondering what you and your daddy share in common and how much you love each other. And he'd be like, oh, my dad is great. My dad's really awesome. And, like, you know, we love business. And sometimes we're up late on the phone talking about business. And he, like, tells me how to make America great again. And I'm like, oh, I love making America great again. Now, you would hope that, well, is there some policy substance sprinkled into this? Not at all. Not at all. Mr. Trump, what have you learned about yourself during this entire process? Well, I've learned that I'm fantastic and I'm great. His wife, they asked his wife, what would you change about your husband if you could change anything? She says, you know, sometimes I would stop that foul language, but sometimes it's absolutely necessary. He's got to do it. He's America's daddy. He must scold the black people of the nation, damn it. Scold the Muslims. What are we doing here? No, okay. Here's why this is so beyond fucked up. Journalism? They're doing the opposite of journalism. This is the polar opposite of journalism. I'm not kidding when I say you can go to some police states, some authoritarian regimes, and their state-owned TV networks, where the whole point of it is propaganda for those people, for the leaders, they wouldn't have done as big of a fluff piece as we saw last night on CNN with these guys. Now, look, there are so many people who are not political junkies who might watch this segment and go, come on, you're being too hard, man. You're just learning about the family. Don't you want to know about the family in order before they get elected? And it's just a nice moment where we, you know, talk about things that are more personal. But, no, you don't get it because the whole point of the media is supposed to be, in a democracy, it's supposed to hold government accountable and people who want to be our politicians and our leaders accountable. So you're supposed to fact check. You're supposed to give data and information. You're supposed to call them out when they're wrong. You're supposed to say to them, hey, your budget numbers don't add up. Hey, let's talk about this past you had where you were openly a con man. Trump University, for example, where you took people's money. It wasn't even a university. You would take people's money and then upsell them to get the better product, and then there was no better product. And you hired people who were known con artists to run the class. There's a thousand and one things. Hey, Mr. Trump, you say you're really, really against offshoring and outsourcing jobs. Well, why is it the case, though, that you have your ties made in China? You know, your daughter has scarves, her own scarves, also made in China. They just got recalled because they're a fire threat. This is what you talk about. Guys, the whole point of politics is supposed to be, say it with me, policy. That's what it's called, politics. Policy is supposed to be what it's about. So this is what I want to do with the country. Here's my plan on healthcare. Here's my plan on immigration. Here's my plan on the economy. Here's my plan on foreign policy. You got none of that last night. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, they're not running to be your boyfriend. They're not running to be your girlfriend. They're not running to be your friend. They're not running to hold hands and frolic in the meadow. They're not running to sit next to you on a Sunday and sip coffee and chat about sports or fucking fashion or any of that stuff. That's not the point of running for president. The point is, hey, this is my vision for the country, and let me give you details about how I want to bring that about and why it's the better vision than the other person. This entire thing last night was all personal. It was to humanize the monster. Now, again, I know some people would take issue with me calling him a monster, but it ain't me, it's him. You go look at what he said, quote, torture even if it doesn't work. Well, that would put you right in league with all the worst monsters and the worst terrorists in the world. I mean, that's not a debatable thing. You're just violating international law. He says we should attack civilians in the Middle East. Don't just go after ISIS. Go after the families of ISIS. Okay, well, many of them are heartbroken. Their kids are even in ISIS. They don't want them to be in ISIS. And you're going to go after the moms and the dads and the grandpas and the toddlers? The fuck is wrong with you? That should disqualify you with something like that. I'm promising to commit war crimes. Well, let me have you on with your wife and your family, and we'll humanize the shit out of you. And we'll talk about how, oh, Mr. Trump, you're so misunderstood. People don't get that you're a good guy. Tell me again about the present that you got for your wife on your third anniversary and how it made her feel. We're watching old media in the U.S. is such a joke. We're watching journalism collapse in front of us. There is no more journalism in the mainstream media. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. So, I mean, obviously I'm very upset about this because I care about the effect it has on the country. But on the other hand, I guess I should be happy because they're handing over the audience to new media. They're handing it over to print outlets online, to YouTube, yes, to other new media outlets. And this is why our numbers are exploding, is theirs keep shrinking. Because people are they're sick of that. They're not as stupid as you think they are. Okay? They go, that smells like bullshit. And especially millennials. Millennials, they know how to use the fangled new internet thingy-majiggy. They know how to use it. So they've been already reading for a long time sites that they trust. They get detailed news reports. They know what's happening in the world. They understand policy. Now millennials know that other modern nations have universal college, have universal health care, and we're getting screwed. They have paid vacation time by law. And then we have fucking assholes running here promising to commit war crimes, not talking at all about, on the Republican side, vacation time, not talking at all about increasing the minimum wage. And you bring on their family to fucking humanize them and talk about how you're such a good individual. Tell me again how you said you wanted to lower wages. They would never ask that. Donald Trump said in one of the debates, the wages are too high in this country. And again, you bring him on to talk about, tell me about your dog. Did you love Fluffers a lot? I'm sure you did. Fluffers was so great to the family. Tell me about how your son is going to be so great at running your business when you're president of the United States and you're destroying the country. Again, they'd never say that. But you'll miss the entire point of journalism. It's supposed to be to hold people in power accountable, not to suck up to them for access and to try to get ratings. So by all means, Anderson, keep going. Anderson Cooper hosted it, but everybody, all the other hosts, I'm not exonerating any of them. They all suck balls. Wolf Blitzer's never said an interesting thing in his entire life. By all means, keep going. Keep sucking at your fucking job and opening the door for people like me, because I have no censors, I have no controls from above, I have nobody telling me what I can and cannot say, and I actually have a moral compass and I give a shit about what I'm talking about here, so I'd be willing to ask policy-oriented questions, and at the end of the day, to be clear, we're way more entertaining than they are. I mean, who wanted to watch a smooth, slippery hand job of Donald Trump last night? Nobody wanted to see that. Nobody wanted to see that. We need tough questions. We need real journalists. We need real reporters. It certainly ain't coming from the mainstream media, so step the fuck aside and let the pros take over. All right. Let's move on to Reuters, who did just an absolutely incredible job here. Like I just said, I'm ranting against mainstream media. This does not apply to print. Reuters did some tremendous investigative reporting that they deserve so much credit for. And I'm about to lay out in detail what happened there for you right now. Reuters did some stellar investigative reporting into the war in Yemen, and we learned some stunning new facts about what's happening on the ground there. So they say the following. Driven to near irrelevance by the rise of ISIS abroad and security crackdowns at home, Al-Qaeda in Yemen now openly rules a mini-state with a war chest swollen by an estimated $100 million in looted bank deposits and revenue from running the country's third largest port. If ISIS capital is the Syrian city of Raqqa, then Al-Qaeda's is Mural, a southeastern Yemeni port city of 500,000 people. Al-Qaeda fighters there have abolished taxes for local residents, operate speedboats manned by RPG-wielding fighters who impose fees on ship traffic, and make propaganda videos in which they boast about paving local roads and stocking hospitals. This is the most striking unintended consequence of the Saudi-led military intervention in Yemen. The campaign, backed by the United States, has helped Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula to become stronger than at any time since it first emerged almost 20 years ago. Okay. I don't think people really get how important this story is and how big this story is. And this actually ties into the previous segment where we were talking about the shitty job that CNN did in the town hall with Donald Trump and his family, the giant fluff piece. Okay, touch this story, and this is a real news story. Because what happened is the United States is providing arms. You can thank Hillary Clinton for that, too, who approved the arms deals, various arms deals. So the United States is providing arms to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, they're taking those arms and the money, and they're using it in Yemen. So they're bombing Yemen to smithereens. Thousands of people have died. Over 50% of the civilians, the people dead are civilians. They've attacked schools. They've attacked hospitals, committing atrocious war crimes on a regular basis. In fact, that's the point. They don't care about civilian casualties. And the reason why Yemen is bombing Saudi, ironic, the reason why Saudi is bombing Yemen is because Shia Houthis, the Houthi militia, has taken over certain parts of the country, and they overthrew the Sunni government in certain parts of the country. Now, the idea is, even though there's not much evidence to support this, that Iran, Shia government, is supporting the Houthis, Shia militia, and naturally, the Sunnis, especially the Salafists in Saudi Arabia, don't like that. So they decided, well, let's just bomb the shit out of Yemen and let's arm and prop up and give money to our militias, Sunni militias on the ground, who will take the country back for us. Who are those Sunni militias? Al-Qaeda. So the U.S. is arming Saudi. Saudi is arming Al-Qaeda. All because big bad Houthi Shia rebels took over certain parts of Yemen. So as a result of us dumping money, dumping weapons into Saudi Arabia, we are directly leading to the funding of Al-Qaeda. And you know how much money they're making now? $2 million a day. They're continuing to grow. They're continuing to get more power. They're continuing to get more strength. And people, like, sometimes people wonder. They don't read, if they're not reading the news all the time and they don't know all the facts, they look at somebody like myself who's very critical of U.S. foreign policy, and they're just like, oh, whiners. You know, oh, what are you complaining about? What are you talking about? There's a Democrat in office. Get over it. The Democrat's going to be better than the Republican. Sometimes, sometimes not. But this is why we're mad. And our entire policy around the Middle East is totally schizophrenic. So, for example, in Iraq, we're not backing the Sunnis in Iraq. We're backing the Shia militias. Oftentimes, the Shia militias even end up being aligned with Iran. Now, why are we backing them? Because those Shia militias, and Kurds, by the way, who are Sunnis, but we're also on their side, they're fighting ISIS. So it makes sense. Okay, the Shia, we're on their side here in Iraq. you cross the border and go into Yemen? Sorry, not Yemen. You cross the border and go into Syria? We flip sides. So we're like, no, the Shias are with Assad in Syria, and the Kurds are actually with Assad, too, in Syria at this point. But we're going to try to find the moderate Sunni rebels, this third force, like the FSA, for example, who were moderate Sunni rebels, who are now almost totally decimated and gone in Syria. We're going to support them. And it turns out that they happen to be fighting on the same side as ISIS and al-Nusra, who is al-Qaeda. So we're trying to back Sunnis in Syria, Shias in Iraq. In Yemen, we're on the side of the Sunnis. What the fuck are we doing? What are we doing? It doesn't make any sense. What we're doing is we're on both sides. In fact, literally, even in the same conflict, you have the CIA arming one set of rebels and the Pentagon arming another set of rebels. Again, this is in Syria. And then they're fighting each other. So Pentagon arms and money fighting CIA arms and money. Don't tell me that we know what the fuck we're doing. We have no clue what the fuck we're doing. You know, and then also we haven't even mentioned the Turkey angle of this. Turkey is supposed to be one of our top allies, but since we're fighting the Kurds who are fighting ISIS because they're one of the top people fighting ISIS, we're on their side. But then we're not on their side when you talk about it more in Turkey. Well, then we flip and we're on the side of the Erdogan government, Erdogan who's actually been arming and on the side of al-Qaeda in Syria. The fuck is happening here? This is not okay. And when you look at what's happening in Yemen, like there is no argument for the where we've said, I don't know, our allies Saudi, so whatever they want to do. And then Saudi turns around and arms al-Qaeda. Well, then make no mistake about it, you are fucking responsible for that because now you know. What, you think people in the executive branch and you think people at the Pentagon and you think people in the military haven't fucking figured it out, but I figured it out by reading stories in Reuters and I'm the only one who knows this truth? No, they fucking know it. They know that we're arming al-Qaeda. And guess what? They don't give a shit. They don't care because it's not about humanitarianism. It's not about altruism. It's about geopolitical strength and power and control. This is the same fucking reason why David Petraeus floated in a meeting with Obama, why don't we arm al-Qaeda to attack ISIS? We should arm al-Qaeda to attack ISIS in Syria because ISIS is our enemy and one of their people who they don't like are al-Qaeda right now. So, okay, let's arm some al-Qaeda fighters. Everybody's like, whoa, that was too far for them. See, when we arm al-Qaeda, David Petraeus, it's got to be at least one level removed. We got to at least go through Saudi first and then let Saudi arm al-Qaeda. This way we feel better about it even though we know it's the same end result. The number one thing we can do to try to stop the spread of jihadism and radical Islam is to stop funding and arming the shit out of Saudi Arabia because they are the number one exporter of that Salafi ideology. They've even said it with the Syrian refugee crisis. They said, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. We're not taking any refugees, but we will fund Salafi mosques in Europe for them. Are you fucking kidding me? So let's fund the most extremist ideology within Islam. Let's fund mosques that preach that radical ideology where you should kill all the fucking infidels in Europe where it's mostly so-called infidels. Fuck out of here! Fuck out of here! How stupid do you think we are? But that's the thing. Apparently we are really stupid because we keep arming them and we keep holding hands with them and Bush nearly made out with leading Saudi officials. And Obama, oh yeah, Mr. Liberal, Mr. Progressive, Mr. Human Rights, Mr. I won a Nobel Peace Prize. Hillary Clinton, how much money and how much arms would you like, Mr. Salafi maniacs who run a terror state in Saudi Arabia that declare all atheists are terrorists and kill people for drug smuggling and apostasy, among other things? What a joke this is. Cut off the ties immediately. Okay. Isn't that incredible, man? We're fucking arming al-Qaeda again. We're arming al-Qaeda again. Oh, stop it. Stop it. And then they're going to come back and attack. We're going to go, I couldn't see it coming. Well, maybe you should have when you were arming Saudi who was arming them. Okay. Let me do one more. Then we'll take a break. I don't want to do the Bill O'Reilly ones yet. I'm going to wait for after the break for that. All right, let me go to the Planned Parenthood shooter and the update we have. The Associated Press and the Washington Post are following up on the recent anti-abortion terror attack in Colorado. They say on some newly released documents from authorities here, quote, in an interview with detectives after the standoff, Deer, who of course was the perpetrator, told police he had shot at propane tanks in the hopes they would explode. He actually did shoot at them, but they did not blow up. Okay, so what they're saying here is this attack could have been much, much worse. Three people died, nine people were injured, but if he shot at the propane tanks and they exploded, whew, man, it was a whole other level of insanity we would have been seeing. So they say, Deer recited Bible verses throughout the conversation with authorities and said he was happy because his actions ensured that no more abortions would be conducted at the Planned Parenthood facility in Colorado Springs. At a December hearing, he also announced, quote, I am guilty. I'm a warrior for the babies. Oh, boy. So we discussed this not too long ago when this story broke, and you get a sense of what's going on in his mind here. Ultimately, Deer told police he was, quote, upset with Planned Parenthood performing abortions and the selling of baby parts. Oh, no. At the time, what was the big scandal going around the internet? It was the bullshit fake medical organization, the Center for American Medical Progress or something along those lines, bullshit group, front group for anti-abortion activism, and they did a sting video where they spoke to representatives from Planned Parenthood about getting fetal tissue donations for scientific research. They totally and utterly doctored and edited the tapes to make it seem like Planned Parenthood representative was asking for money for profit in return for the fetal tissue. In reality, the cost they were talking about was just shipping costs. So it's illegal to get profit for fetal tissue for research, but it's totally legal for them to pay the shipping costs, which is what the standard policy at Planned Parenthood. So they asked for shipping costs. They doctored the videotape to make it look like she's asking for profit for fetal tissue. And they try to make it seem like there's this terrible underground genocidal movement where we slaughter babies and then we, you know, sell the parts for profit. That's not happening. They came to them and said, hey, we are doctors trying to cure diseases, so we need fetal tissue. How can we arrange this? How much does it cost? And then she says, oh, it's only for shipping, but it costs X amount. And they would cut out the part where she says it's only about shipping. So they run with this fake scandal. The media blows up. It's total bullshit. The fact checkers come out a few weeks later and say, we looked at the whole tape, and this is total horseshit. But nonetheless, some crazy people on the right saw this. They were motivated by it. You put some scary music behind it. You edit the tape to make it seem like people are genocidal. And then they actually become genocidal, and they go out there and they start killing people. This is terrorism. That's what this is. It's violence for political and religious ideology. That's terrorism. You're attacking civilians for political and religious ideology. So I have one more quote here for you because this is probably most telling. He called Obama the Antichrist, naturally. So again, totally brainwashed with right-wing propaganda and the furthest right-wing elements in the country. And he said this. When he died and went to heaven, he would be met by all the aborted fetuses at the gates of heaven, and they would thank him for what he did because his actions save lives of other unborn fetuses. We're talking about a totally deluded religious lunatic here. And probably the craziest thing is, when you actually go to the Bible and you read the specific parts on this, the opposite is true. The Bible does not say you shouldn't do abortion. In fact, there are parts in the Bible where God performs abortions. He rips the fetuses out of the stomachs of the women in Samaria at one point. There are prescriptions in the Bible where if your wife cheats on you and she's pregnant, you have to give her bitter water. She's supposed to drink it. And then if she miscarries, has an abortion, it's okay because it was the guy who she cheated on you with. But if she doesn't, then it's your baby and everything's all good. Hello, that's saying if your wife cheats on you, get an abortion. That's the whole point. They don't read it, they don't care, but they're still delusional, and they still believe it. They're brainwashed into it, and it comes from the fundamentalist preachers, the far-right-wing preachers, who say it, and they say it over, and they say it over, and they say it over again, where they talk about how the Bible wants you not no abortion, and you're supposed to care about life, unless the lives are black or Muslim or anything like that. They don't count. But the Bible talks about how we're supposed to care about little babies, and there's no abortion. Abortion's evil and wrong, and it's of the devil. And this guy's so stupid, he hears these conservative preachers, and he's like, right on, totally true. Now let me go kill people because I'm pro-life. Stop the stupidity. This actually reminds me of Muslim fundamentalists, too, because we've spoken about it with drug taking. How there's apparently some passages in the Quran which say drug taking is of the devil. It's of Satan. You can't do intoxicants, as they call it. Well, okay, then why is it that jihadists, specifically in Syria, they've been captured with massive amounts of what's called Captagon pills, which is amphetamine pills. So it's like, oh, drug taking, oh, it's haram, it's so wrong, it's so evil, unless I'm taking it, in which case ignore that part of the Quran, because I ain't listening to it, even though I believe in the Quran totally. You believe in it except when you don't. Same thing with this guy. I believe in it except when I don't, because the Bible says abortion is actually okay, and it prescribes it in some circumstances, but I still represent the Bible more, and I'm gonna kill you if you do that, even though it says to do it in the Bible. God damn it! These fucking people don't know anything. They don't know anything. And again, this goes to show you religion can be used for good and religion can be used for bad. And this is obviously an example of it being used for the worst of all imaginable things, terrorism. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I got some Bill O'Reilly segments for you, which should be fun. And we have a delicious example of Republican hypocrisy coming out of Tennessee. Shocker. You don't want to miss that. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Bill O'Reilly here is going to entertain us with his silliness. Good thing his audience is all above the age of 3,000, because if he had a younger audience here, man, would he get some hate mail? I'm sure he gets a lot of that anyway. All right. Bill O'Reilly has some strong words here for Bernie Sanders. This ought to be good.
Far out there. In my lifetime, I have never seen a political candidate in his station as radical and as disassociated with reality as Bernie Sanders. Never.
Well,
Eugene McCarthy,
okay.
George McGovern, Barry Goldwater, all of them pale beside Bernie Sanders, who lives in a complete world of his own.
No, but you know why Bernie Sanders has the kind of surprising support, why he's exceeding expectations when he talks about Wall Street too big to fail? He is hitting at people who share this feeling, so what?
Right to the heart. He says he's telling these teenagers, and when I use the word teenagers, it's a mental state, not a age state, because it's only teenagers. It's like American Bandstand people who can say, yeah, that's right, Bernie's going to break up the big banks, Katie, because he's not going to break them up, because there are laws against a tyrannical president coming in and going, you know what, Arby's? I hate your own speech. You're out of here. You can't do it, Bernie. Even if you want to do it, even if Ben and Jerry tell you you can do it, you can't do it.
Maybe they should break up the big ice cream manufacturers and we would all be happier because we have more access to ice cream.
Okay, but there's something startling taking place on the factor at this very moment. The radical leftist Juan Williams is agreeing with the rather conservative Katie Padlet that what Bernie Sanders is saying, and millions of people are, I guess, apparently buying, is hooey. Hooey.
Well, yeah.
Oh, that was embarrassing. Look at these dinosaurs. They're dinosaurs on the O'Reilly factor. Oh, that was adorable. Look at some of the stuff he said.
Bernie Sanders and what he's saying to these kids, these teenagers, these are like the youngins who watch the American Bandstand.
The fuck are you talking? American Bandstand? Didn't that go off the air in, like, 1978?
You're like, oh, these damn kids, get off my lawn with your Zima and your hula hoops and your Macarena. I don't like it none. Shoo now.
What the fuck are you saying?
This is, you know what this is? This is hooey. I think this is hooey. Fiddlesticks.
As he makes fun of the younger generation for being out of touch, he's proving that he's out of touch. He's a dinosaur, man. And this is, you know, borne out in the numbers. Bill O'Reilly's the average age of his audience, I think, is above 70. That's unbelievable. And he's got people watching him at home like,
yeah, you tell these damn kids. That's right. Yeah, because Bernie Sanders is a socialist, and you're trying to save capitalism, Bill O'Reilly. Yoo-hoo!
Which is the irony of this entire segment. Because, think about it. When Bernie talks about breaking up the big banks, what's he really talking about doing? Saving capitalism. See, Bill O'Reilly doesn't know this because he's an idiot. He's a political idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's been talking out of his ass for decades. But is that, hey, these institutions are too big to fail, meaning that if they fail, which is supposed to be allowed to happen in a capitalist context, if they fail, they'll bring down the U.S. economy with it, they could bring down the world economy with it, and then we'll need to bail them out. Again, bailing out is anti-capitalist. Bailing out is socialist and actually corporatist because you're bailing out these specific corporations. So they're too big to fail, which means they're too big to exist, which means they're a threat to capitalism. So the whole point of breaking them up is to break them up into smaller banks so that those smaller banks can compete within the confines of a capitalist system, and then that would help us, and that would move us in the right direction. But he's so fucking utterly clueless. He's like, this guy, he's so radical that he wants to save capitalism.
The thing that you're arguing against him for being some sort of socialist far-left person, he's proving he's not with the same policy you're attacking right now. God, he's so stupid. He's so stupid. And then also, like, that's his main point was breaking up the big banks. Ah, I proved he's a radical. Bill, again, when you look at his policy positions, not only are they not radical, they're fucking perfectly mainstream. They're mainstream in two ways. In an international context, so in the the parameters of all modern nations, that's what most of them have, and also in the context of when you look at polling data in the United States of America, when you look at Democrats and Republicans and independents, when you look at the actual people, not the political establishment and the politicians, when you look at the people, the overwhelming majority agree with Bernie Sanders' policy positions. You name the position, and I can tell you the number. 80% want to raise the minimum wage. 58% want to raise taxes on the rich. 60% say under no circumstance cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. 58% want to legalize marijuana, which is something that Bernie Sanders has called for. 51% want a Medicare for all. Single-payer system of like, hey, you're so out of touch. Ironically, that proves how out of touch you are. And for you to think he's some sort of far-left radical shows that you're totally ignorant of world politics. You're totally ignorant of the actual political spectrum that exists. And the projection is real because everything you're saying about him is true of you. He's the radical. No, you're the radical because you're against the things that the overwhelming majority of the American people are in favor of, and, he's a radical and he's anti-capitalist, even though you're the one that's apparently anti-capitalist because you're a corporatist because you want these too-big-to-fail banks to exist and not to have real capitalism. So it's just always amazing to watch somebody like Bill O'Reilly who can assert things with complete and utter confidence. But then when you just do like a little bit of fact-checking and you know a little bit about political science and the economy, you go, oh, man, he has no clue what he's talking about. None. Get off my lawn, kids! All right, now I got one more here with Bill O'Reilly. Always fun. Ripping this guy to shreds here. Bill O'Reilly is somehow going to make Donald Trump look reasonable. Mission impossible has been accomplished. Bill O'Reilly and Donald Trump went back and forth about black voters. Oh, boy. Let's watch.
With black youth, with African-American youth, you have a 59% unemployment. With people of prime age, it's much higher.
But how are you
going to
get jobs for them? Many of them are ill-educated and have tattoos on their foreheads. And then, you know, how are you going to – and I hate to be generalized about it, but it's true. If you look at all the educational statistics, how are you going to give jobs to people who aren't qualified for jobs?
We're going to bring jobs back. We're going to have Apple computers made in this country, not just – we're going
to
have
a lot of
skills to
make
out.
Apple computers, yeah? And the educational system – what?
We will get the skills and we'll develop the skills. We have an incredible population and they don't have the jobs. Our good jobs are going to China. They're going to Mexico every
know
day.
That.
Carrier,
but it's more challenging.
Carrier, well, wait a minute. Carrier and Nabisco and Ford and every company you can name, they're building in Mexico. They're not here.
I got it.
We have politicians that don't know what they're doing.
But it's more challenging in the African American
industry.
Look, when we drive up to Yankee Stadium, we go through Harlem, all right? It's more challenging for a poor child in Harlem without parental guidance in a school that's part than it is for some white kid out in Garden City. All right, and you say you can bring jobs back, but how, you know, if the kid isn't qualified to do the job and can't do the work, I mean, you got to get into the infrastructure of the African American community. You have any plan to do that?
Well, it is true, and it's about education.
All right, so I'm going to shock many people in the audience here by saying, I almost totally agree with what Trump said there. So he lays it out. When Bill O'Reilly tries to go after him on the specific issue of what are you going to do about these black communities, black people, and unemployment, laziness, and all that stuff, Donald Trump's like, Bill,
we've shipped out, like, all of the good middle-class factory jobs. There was a time when we actually had a bunch of them. We had a lot of good middle-class factory jobs, and the black community was moving into those jobs. But then we had this, you know, a whole bunch of different so-called free trade deals, a.k.a. outsourcing deals that were passed, and that absolutely decimated the African-American community. So we had NAFTA, we had CAFTA, we had GATT, we now have the World Trade Organization. And Donald Trump is like, dude, I'm going to try to bring jobs back. Now, by the way, do I believe him? Of course not. I mean, he has his fucking ties made in China. So as he says, we got to stop outsourcing, he's outsourcing. He can't even stop doing it himself. So I don't believe him when he says it. But if he meant it, and if it were true, is that one of the main solutions? Absolutely. If you have a whole bunch of jobs that are available for people in the black community and people in the white community and all Americans, guess what? People are going to take those fucking jobs. They're not just inherently lazy. We've gone over the statistics before on the show, but there are more people than job opportunities. So the math doesn't work. Some people are going to be left behind. It's got nothing to do with being lazy. It's got to do with macroeconomic factors. So Trump is almost totally right there when he's like, why are you, like, lecturing the black community? The problem is macroeconomics. The problem is Washington and the policies we've pushed that have outsourced so many decent jobs. And then when O'Reilly pushes him more, Trump's like, he's like, how are you going to do that? There, you know, it's harder in that community. Trump's like, dude, education. Like, what do you mean? We invest in those communities and do education? Again, do I think Trump is actually going to invest in those communities? No, he's not. But in terms of the argument he's making here, it's true. If you invest in and you actually fully fund schools in black communities, well, then obviously they're going to get a better education and they're going to have a better shot when they leave those schools. So the answer is education, and the answer is bringing back jobs and stopping these stupid free trade deals and working our way out of the previous ones that we got into. And I would add a third prong, this prong they obviously both of these idiots disagree with, and the drug war, because the drug war is the new Jim Crow. It disproportionately targets minorities. It locks them up for stupid shit like, hey, you got a joint on you and I'm going to lock you up. And just like Nixon's top aide recently admitted, he's like, dude, are you kidding me? Yeah, that was the whole point. The whole point was we couldn't control the hippie community. We couldn't control the black community. They're not our voting bloc. They weren't in favor of us. So you can't just criminalize being a hippie or being a black person. So we passed the drug laws and then criminalized the lifestyle and locked them up. So if you're a rich white guy who's a Republican who drinks whiskey at night, that's fine. You're doing a drug. That's a drug, but no problem. Go ahead. But if you're a black guy who comes home from work and you smoke a joint, well, we're going to lock you up and throw away the key. So, yeah, the point was to control the black community and lock them up. Mass incarceration. That's the whole idea behind it. So if you do those three things, bring actual good middle-class jobs back to the United States, work our way out of these so-called free trade deals that outsourced all of our jobs, do fully fund education, and give better schools in the black communities, and then the drug war, that would absolutely, you know, help the African-American community tremendously. And it would destroy this ridiculous myth that, you know, somehow you know how they are. It's not macroeconomic factors. It's not political factors. It's on them. You know how they are with their backwards culture and their hip-hoppity music and all that stuff that ruined them. Oh, it's so bad. No, that's a fucking cop-out, and that's a way to blame individuals for things that are not the individual's fault. And I want to give you Bill O'Reilly's quote here so you see how fucking outrageous and how racist he really is, because he is that. Okay, he said, quote, how are you going to get jobs for them, talking about black people? Many of them are ill-educated and have tattoos on their forehead. I hate to be generalized, but it's true. I want to repeat that so you get the sense of exactly what he's saying. How are you going to get jobs for them? Many of them are ill-educated and have tattoos on their forehead. I hate to be generalized, but it's true. Define many, Bill. Black people, many of them have tattoos on their forehead. I hate to be generalized, but it's true. Is it true that many black people have tattoos on their forehead? Again, define many. What do you mean by many? Many black people have tattoos on their forehead. I saw a great tweet about this. Somebody said, I swear Bill O'Reilly looked at Gucci Man and said, that represents black people. Oh, God, he's so out of touch. I mean, it's so funny that he spends all day and night lecturing everybody about, my view of the world is correct, and this is how I see it, and I'm in touch with what's going on with the folks, the normal people. And look at all these black people with tattoos on their forehead. I hate to be generalized about saying blacks have tattoos on their forehead, but it's true. Bill O'Reilly, he may have, like, you know, hey, I got a black friend. I have a black person who works for me, so I'm not racist. But does he have any actual black friends? Like, does he know a bunch of black people that he regularly hangs out with, he regularly talks to? You know, is he in that circle? Of course not. Of course not. Because if he was, he would read that statement and he would say, that is preposterous. Many black people have tattoos on their forehead. I hate to generalize, slash, no, I don't at all. But it's true. It's true. Many black people, forehead tattoos, of course. Of course. Thanks, Bill O'Reilly, for your wisdom. Bill O'Reilly, the black community expert. What percentage of black what percentage of black people do you think has tattoos on their forehead? That's a serious question. If we looked at the entire African-American population in the United States and looked at what percentage had tattoos on their forehead, seriously, what percentage do you think it would be? It's without a doubt, no doubt, less than 1%, significantly less than 1%. But Bill O'Reilly might look at that and go, I don't care, still true. Many black people have tattoos on their forehead, and I'm going to use this to make a broader point about all black people. Okay, I gotta go on here. Still got a lot to get to. Anal sex. Oh, we're having fun here, bro. We're having fun, broski. Apparently, the British government is concerned about the rise of anal sex among the population, and they want people to stop it. So the Independent reports here, the government is concerned that increasing numbers of young people are trying anal sex, according to an official consultation. Officials of the Department for Culture, Media, and Sport, it's a hilarious department, are baffled at the increased popularity of the act, despite apparent research suggesting it is not pleasurable for women. The warning is included in a consultation document issued by the department about plans to further restrict access to online porn. Oh, shit. It argues that young people are trying anal sex as a result of having viewed pornography, and that this is an unwelcome development. Quote, many people worry that young people will come to expect their real-life sexual experiences to mirror what they or other peers see in pornography, which often features ambiguous depictions of consent, submissive female stereotypes, and unrealistic scenarios, the consultation reads. Okay, I'm going to need you to go ahead and fuck right off, British government. All right, you want to talk about being too far left. You want to talk about such big government that it's intrusive in our private lives in a way that's totally unacceptable. Here it is right here. Now, you know, maybe I'm wrong because this is actually kind of a mix. It's like this is something that the far right would love. Oh, yeah, controlling people's sex lives. I'm on board with that. But then also this is something, at least in the European context, that the left might like in the sense that it's some government agency with a report that's a big government that's saying, you know, there are health issues here that we need to be concerned about. So there's it's a little bit of an amalgamation and a mix here of the left and the right. But either way, I don't like it, okay? And maybe this is my libertarian streak showing, particularly on social issues here, but hey, piss off! What the fuck? Why are you getting in people's bedrooms and, in many circumstances, cock-blocking people here? I mean, now, if you were just talking about health, and you were to say, hey, look, we've had an uptick in health issues as a result of this, so wear protection. Well, then I have zero issues with what you're saying. But I just laid it out for you. The report says that it's a broader report where they say they want to further restrict access to online pornography. What the fuck, man? Like, so you want to make decisions about policy based on your preference, the government's preference, as to what kind of sex is acceptable and not acceptable. Well, as long as it's consensual, which it is, stop! It's got nothing to do with you at all. And they say, well, we have research that shows that women don't think it's all that pleasurable. But your study showed that a certain percentage of women, and men, I'm sure, agreed to anal sex. Well, if they agree to it, it's consensual. So your concern about, hey, people don't like it, that's not merited anymore if it's consent and they agree to it. Now, maybe after one somebody tries it or something, they're like, you know, I don't like that, and we're not going to do it again. But then they won't do it again. They'll be able to work it out on their fucking own. You don't need a fucking government minister sitting in the living room or in the bedroom like, okay, now, what was done last night? All right, we have 69. Anything else? Was there lube involved? Did you have some leather clothes, maybe some assless chaps? Tell me what's going on here, and then I will adjudicate what you can and cannot do or should not. Fuck off! Fuck off! Stop it! Don't control pornography. Let people do what they want. They're not hurting anybody else. Don't control what's going on in the bedroom. And this idea of like, oh, gosh golly, there's the sexual trends are developing over time because of this pornography that's online. Yeah. And? Like, no, I'm going to need you to do it in a bedroom, lights off, missionary style, and it can't take any more than 6.5 minutes. Go. You seriously need to butt the fuck out. I mean, I read this story, part of me thinks this is, like, worse than the NSA collecting all of our metadata. It's really not, so calm down. I don't really mean that. But it's the same kind of thing. It's like the government going in areas where they're not welcome at all. They're like, all right, anal sex, bad. Stop doing this, stop doing that. Going to restrict pornography, too. I mean, this is where you have the British government, because this government is so big with the Department of Sport and anal sex and whatever the fuck this is, they're just getting in people's lives. So this is something like, I feel like evangelical Christians in the U.S., the fundamentalist Christians, would look at this and go, right on, you tell them to stop having pleasure sex. You do that, because we don't like that either. Anytime the evangelical Christian right in America is agreeing with you and what you're doing, you might want to reevaluate. So I know people in Britain, according to the numbers, are way more atheistic and secular, and they're right for that, way more enlightened. But again, if you're doing shit that the Christian right in America agrees with, you probably should stop. And in this case, you definitely should stop. Get out of our bedrooms. We don't need you in there. Okay. More. The Independent is reporting on an amazing scientific breakthrough when it comes to aging. They say an anti-aging pill that could help us live up to a decade longer has moved a step closer with the discovery of a key component of the aging process. Protein molecules known as GSK3 are responsible for shortening our natural lives, according to a new study which suggests that life could be prolonged by effectively switching them off. Experiments with fruit flies, which also have the GSK3 protein, found that the molecule could be inhibited by low-level lithium use, which extended their lives by 16%. This has raised hopes that lithium, or more likely another similar drug with fewer side effects, could eventually be turned into a tablet to prolong human life. Wow, this is a fucking amazing story, and goddammit, I love science. You know, I've said it before, but science actually does what religion only wishes it can do. So when somebody is terminally ill, they're on death's doorstep, they feel horrible, you know, they're like, oh, God, they hope there's something bigger and something more out there, and they just wish to relieve themselves of the pain and feel better. Well, here you have science. They're actually working on those problems. Obviously, there's pain medication, and there's certain kinds of therapy, LSD and MDMA, as recent studies have shown, that help relieve the emotional stress and pain of that. Now we're learning we can extend life a decade longer potentially with this new anti-aging pill. So you actually can avoid suffering, you can avoid pain, you can reach a state of happiness and bliss and thrive through science. Now obviously we've also ended up creating nuclear weapons, which is the opposite, and it's the horrible aspect of humanity, but the potential to make human life better and the potential to try to foster what is effectively a heaven on earth is something that's possible only through science, because they're actually problem-solving. And guys, the Fountain of Youth is right around the corner. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever actually get a just an out-and-out fountain of youth, and hey, you could live forever if you want to. But is there going to be a way to extend the average age of life to about 100 years? Right now, I think it's about 78 or 80 or something like that. Yeah, there's going to come a way, I think, soon to extend our lives to 100 years on average. Then will it be 150? Yeah, they'll come up with something. 200? All you have to do is find what the aging process is, what facilitates it, and how to reverse those individual things, like the individual symptoms of aging, and then, yeah, you could do it. I mean, there are people, I forget his name now. God, this is the worst time to blank. But there's one of these futurist kind of scientists who's been talking about this for a while now. He's like, oh, yeah, it's totally possible. We're going to reverse aging at some point. Like, we're going to make it so you can live forever. And then, obviously, there are broader implications. What the fuck do we do about overpopulation? People, obviously, how are you going to have babies anymore if everybody's living forever? So there's a million and one things that we have to think about from an ethical perspective and a cultural perspective. But, man, it's a weird time to be alive. I mean, I was born in 88, and I kind of grew up with the internet, and now we're starting to see the beginning phases of true AI and stuff like that, which is mind-blowing. But even with anti-aging stuff, like, okay, we grew up vaccines and stuff that obviously extends life and makes it better, and pain management, like, all that stuff is there, antibiotics. But now we're moving into, like, another generation where it looks like there's no stopping this march towards the future technologically and medicinally. And it's both really scary and a really hopeful time. It's this weird mix of emotions that I get when we talk about it. Okay. I'm out of time here, guys. I've got to save these two other stories for tomorrow. I love y'all, man. I will see everybody back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Everybody have a great night. Much love. Peace.